So, Dave, I think you've noticed a thing.
Oh, have I?
Yeah, you were saying just in the moments leading up to the start, you were actually talking about this music, and you go, I think, what did you say?
I believe I said, I noticed that it seems to always play in front of Trump stories. I feel like this is the unofficial politics theme of Ask an Atheist.
I think unofficial is exactly it, because there's two themes that I play specifically for specific things now. I play the metal theme when I'm angry about something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not something I decided to do. This is something other people have pointed out to me. When I'm angry about something, I go, or when I think a segment's going to make me angry, I think, oh, I'm going to drop in some metal music here. Or when I think when we're talking about dead babies or something really depressing, I lead into the polka music.
Just need some.
just so that I have something that, you know, sort of change the mood, because
I feel like that's equivalent to a kitten picture to lighten the mood.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I like being angry. I don't like being depressed. I think that's how that works. And this is Ask an Atheist, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. Toll-free nationwide. It's our voicemail number. Joining me today is Tyson. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me back.
Fantastic.
I'm glad that you're finally embracing the metal.
Yeah. 12-year-old Sam is back.
Mm. Can I just say, I heard something on the radio that I found just terribly depressing.
What's that?
Disturbed covering Simon and Garfunkel's The Sound of Silence.
Oh, it is very disturbing.
It is so bad.
It is bad. It is awful.
It is awful?
You know, the funny thing is, I'm going to flash you guys.
Uh-oh.
I'm actually wearing a Disturbed t-shirt right now. This was not planned.
There is a lot of, you know, metal is never really my music, but it's definitely like, you know, it's not my cup of tea, but like it. It's what's good for you. Great. But I heard that like, no.
But have you followed Disturbed at all? I mean, are you familiar with their work? Every album, they probably have one or two covers
of
classic songs.
They like doing covers.
And they usually do, this is an abomination, but they usually do really well. They usually do really good. Like they covered Shout, and just, it was fantastic.
I really like their cover of Midlife Crisis.
Yeah.
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 I'm a big Faith No More fan.
And it's not that they just mimicked it. They made it their own song, but it's still similar. And it's like, oh, no, I get it. I understand.
Right.
Like you kept the, you know.
But not, the strange thing is, hello, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
How are you?
Good. I'm
okay.
Good. Wow.
Yes.
I've spent the last couple of weeks in general going, la, 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 I hear nothing.
We'll get to that in a minute. But you are the first two people telling me that this song is terrible.
It's awful.
Yeah, that's interesting. Oh, everybody seems to love it.
Oh, God. I don't know.
I heard it on the radio, and I'm just like, I just heard I didn't know who it was, and I'm like, this is disgusting. Why would you do that? And then I'm like, got to Disturbed, like, oh, the monkey rock people. Okay, that makes sense.
you're going to have to back up it and smell it. Oh.
I knew what he meant.
Yeah, okay.
I do remember when I was much more judgy about music, hearing that and literally laughing at the thought that anybody would like that song.
You judgy about music.
I don't.
Shame.
It is the darkness inside me that I really try and suppress, because I have literally
absolute horror, perhaps.
I know. Nicely done. But no, I literally know of people who have had therapy sessions about the way I treated them for the music they listened to.
Oh,
so
boy.
I was really bad, and I'm trying to like be much more live and let live. But
I had told you that in confidence, and now here you are. Now I have to go back to therapy again.
Oh,
thanks
so
a lot.
Oh,
you
man.
Know, a lot of people. I've always tried being not judgy about music, but people just assume because what I listen to that I
you would have to. You can't listen to Frank Zappa and be accepting of pop.
Yeah. What do you listen to? Like Sam, what are your two? Like Frank Zappa. I mean, you know, occasionally. A lot less than, you know, I used to listen to him incessantly. Now I'm kind of cooled on that, but still King Crimson every freaking day. And everyone's like, oh man, if I tell him that I like anything, he's going to be, you know. No, music is like the one thing I can't look down on other, you know, it's like, it's the one I have built positions of superiority about the proper way to consume cheese. But I try very hard not to have that sort of thing about music, because I just, too many good people who listen to music, I think, is really terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of terrible, this is Randy from Virginia who writes, I've been listening to your show for a long time and I have always loved it, but lately your show seems to be less and less about atheism and religion in general. In fact, you were more than 16 minutes into one of your recent shows before you even touched anything religion related. There are a lot of podcasts out there competing for my limited time, so I'm afraid it's time for me to move on. Keep fighting the good fight and best luck to you all. Well, I'd say thank you, Randy, but I actually don't think you're listening. So, well, thank you, Randy. Well... I was kind of waiting for this email, and here it is. And it's time to talk about it. We've done a series of episodes in, well, I guess in the last month, where we barely talk about, we talk about subjects, you know, I try to connect them to the atheist community, but let's be honest, they're not about atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did say I was going to do that. I actually had an episode, and it happened to be...
I feel it was like right around November 7th, 8th, 9th, somewhere
in there, yeah, beginning of November, right when my downloads just started tanking. Well, let's be honest. I had the episode about, you know, when he says you went 16 minutes before you even talked about anything religion-related. I'm thinking, he must be talking about the Cubs episode.
No.
Because I literally, like, we're in the middle, like, the middle of it. I go, this whole segment is about the Cubs.
And if you think talking about Cubs is not a religion, then you can go ahead and just stop listening.
Yeah.
That is the most religious fandom in the world.
I don't even know if, did I mention that I am occasionally, that I do allow myself certain types of, what do you call it, superstition when it comes to baseball?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, are they actual superstitions, or are they just kind of playing along because it's fun?
What are actual superstitions versus...
Do you believe in your heart that you have to do this for the Cubs to win, or do you just do it because it's ritual?
Do you think that these things you do have an actual real effect on the outcome of games?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And no, I mean, I'm answering yes to his either-or question.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean... I think it's really. I think exercising your cognitive dissonance muscle is important. if you're going to have to think about things and try to puzzle them out logically, and
sports is a good way to do that too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I'm doing it somewhere. I allow it because it's absolutely meaningless. I did it. Like, it means nothing. Do I ultimately think that any of it is meaningful? Absolutely not. I don't even think the sport is meaningful, so who cares? and that's exactly it. So, yeah, I'll do the rally cap thing. I'll make all of the mathematical errors. Oh, God, he's striking out 14 times. He's got to hit a homer now just to keep the stats right. I'll do all that, but I know what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, as always, there's a little jerk ass in the back of my head saying, you know that's crap, right? I know.
But is it all crap?
More beer.
I don't know. I say this as somebody who, as I do not believe in superstitions, but I put myself in a position to follow these superstition standpoints at soccer games.
There's a picture of you, me, and another member of the atheist community all wearing rally caps watching
this is true.
The Canadians. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not,
it's more out of connection to the fans around
me. Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah. And it's like, I like slinging that kind of lingo because it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
It's like what, honestly, and this might be the nerdiest comparison I have ever made, it's like playing a mage or religious follower in a role-playing game. It's really what I'm doing. I'm adopting the character of a baseball fan.
You're LARPing as...
I'm LARPing as a baseball fan, yeah. So it's like in my day-to-day things, I'd believe this. No. But once a week, I, you know, put on a uniform and pretend that I believe that my thoughts can affect statistics. And...
Well, there's a study that came out a while ago that I got really frustrated in the way the sort of skeptic community sort of glommed onto this as an example of how superstition is so deep in our culture and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And it was all about sports. And it was like, you know, how superstitious sports fans are and the things they do. But the problem is that the study that they were looking at wasn't asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
It was asking things like, do you follow a tradition, or do you do the same thing on every game day? Do you do? Are there certain pieces of clothing that you'll wear? Are there certain things you'll do before each game? But it never asked, do you believe that actually affects the outcome of the game? I wear my Sounders jersey on game days. Because it's game day, and I want to wear my Sounders jersey. We go to the taco truck because they make great tacos. I don't think the Sounders are going to win because they go to the taco truck, but that is a tradition and a part of my game day experience.
But have you ever not gone to the taco truck, and then the Sounders do terribly, and then you're like, you know what I didn't do today? Was go to the taco truck.
No, I don't think
no?
so.
Right.
Well, yeah, that doesn't happen to me either. I go, oh, I didn't do this thing, or I didn't, you know, so that's why they lost. Like, once the game is over, Boring Sam comes back.
Right. And, you know. Well, I remember years ago with the Seahawks, we used to get these donut holes from Safeway. They're like chocolate-covered donut holes, and they became our lucky donut holes, and we joked about that, and we laughed about that, but I bought them not because I thought they made the Seahawks win, but because they're donut holes, and donut holes are fantastic.
All right. Well,
I think we've killed that horse.
Yeah. So two Sounders fans and maybe an embryonic Sounders fan here. So it's going to devolve into sports. But that's exactly my point. This is sort of multifaceted. One, this is a show about what it's like being an atheist. And I think being an atheist and a sports fan, because I am one and nobody talks about it, is kind of interesting. So I like talking about interfacing with sports and the superstition of sports and the religiosity of sports and just sports sometimes. And you know, I mean, I think I've devoted about 90 minutes to it over the course of 7 years. Okay, closer to 2 hours now. But... And I think that's acceptable. But the other thing is, I did an episode called Something More Difficult, which is a Babylon 5 quote, which is why you know it's me, saying I can't leave this stuff alone right now.
Right.
It's difficult to not talk about. And I have a hard time seeing what I'm seeing in the newspaper right now and not thinking this affects and thinking that this is somehow completely orthogonal to the atheism community, that there's no space for us to talk about this. We should stick with complaining about the Pope. Warning, we're complaining about the Pope in this episode. And I need to talk about it. I think part of it might be just the nature of the times that we live in. Part of it might be my growth as a talk show host, if not necessarily an atheist talk show host. But I can't leave this on the floor anymore. I can't leave this on the cutting room floor. I have to talk about it. And if that means I lose a whole bunch of my listeners, I think it may be time for me to do that. I don't know.
I feel personally like this show has been ongoing now for 6 years.
Yeah, we're approaching seven. We started in 2010.
Okay. So in 7 years worth of episodes, like, we can be pretty comprehensive on religion, skepticism, and the separation of church and state.
Right.
And we, you know, we know because we literally have just spent the last few weeks doing the Gritty Reboot series where we go revisit things that we've already talked about.
Yeah. Because, not done with those, by the way. I just need to record more.
And they're fun. And I really like sort of going back. But it's a sign that, well, this subject is a very large and very complex subject. It's not an endless subject either.
Right.
And, you know, opinions change, we grow as people, and sometimes there's more to talk about. But sometimes it's like, we need to talk about a larger world as well. We need to, you know, fill in the context where this other conversation fits.
Right.
Because there is that context. And it's something I think we've avoided for a long time, and I think rightly so. Mm-hmm. But I think if there was any reason to change that standard, you know, the election of Little Hands DJ is a mind-blowing moment in the history of America. I do not understand it, and I don't think that it's possible to stick to just skepticism, atheism, and the separation of church and state in the current political climate. You have to expand that conversation because those topics are also going to be touched by so many other topics.
So the show has always meant something different to me. This show has always been about, while those topics have been at the forefront for years, the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And over the last, you know, what, 6 months to a year, maybe it's kind of started transitioning away from that.
Right.
It's the show to me, and the reason why I've always appreciated and enjoyed it is this is the, outlook and the opinion of a small selection of atheists and humanists in the community.
Right.
That's it, you can't not talk about the political discourse that's happening around you and only talk about, you know, what the Vatican did this week. I mean, there's a lot more to it, right. to what Dave was saying. It's like, and a lot of this stuff, if you're going to pay attention and watch, it's going to affect us soon. Because if this is successful, you can continue the rhetoric and it's going to keep going, do you think they don't come for atheists? Do you think they don't come and attack us and then try and stop us from doing things? Because it's going to happen.
Right.
Now, if we can make social impact and change these things and voice our disgust when we see these things happening as a community, not just as atheists, but as humans.
Right.
Then maybe we can make actual change. And the show to me has always been about that. Not about just harping on religion and what we see wrong and how it's hurting or doing good sometimes. We talk about that. It's more about these are our opinions as atheists.
Right.
And if you want to know something, there's a telephone number that pops up at the beginning of the show. You're more than welcome.
And you can email me just as Randy did. And I appreciate there's a level of this that I appreciate is, you know, I don't really go on social media except for business right now because it's Trump.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just want to know how my friends are doing other than the fact that the nation is sort of disintegrating right now. Not because I want to ignore the fact that the nation is disintegrating. I can't do that. But because I want to make sure that I want to see when something actually goes wrong for one of my friends, rather than just in general.
Right.
Or I want to, you know, it's like, oh, I made beef stroganoff today or whatever. Because sometimes you just need that for yourself.
Right.
Just to keep you going. So I kind of understand it if just yet another radio show will not stop talking about this guy. But the fact of the matter is I didn't really talk about this guy during the election. I let the election carry itself because that wasn't what this show was about. But then the Yats gets elected, and now he's, you know, he has the power of life or death over us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least more than he had when he just had tons of money. and
Supposedly. Fake news.
Yeah. So now we got to talk about it. So I am going to continue to talk about it. We need to discuss this, but I will be putting it in the I will be trying to put it into an atheist context as much as I can, just as I did yesterday. Because I mean, what did I do yesterday? What did I save most of my anger for? It was a quote by Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's like, why yell at Trump? He doesn't care about me. This is not something that I'm going to be able to ignore. But I will try to keep it sectioned in a way, like either right up front or right at the end, so that you know where you have an idea where it's going to be. Because this is you're likely going to be downloading this online, which means you got a fast forward button. So,
mm-hmm.
And to that end, President Trump signed an executive order stopping people from 7 Muslim majority nations from entering the U.S. The order puts a 4-month hold on refugees entering the U.S. and also temporarily bans any traveler from Syria, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. Numerous people with green cards were held off flights or left stranded in airports after the order was signed. The Trump administration asserted the order is not a ban on Muslims, but said that they would prioritize the admission of Christian refugees. Protests in a number of airports around the country were held in reaction to the controversial order. Trump raised the possibility of banning all Muslims from immigration to the U.S. while campaigning and even suggested a Muslim registration.
This certainly touches on the separation of church and state. I would like to start there.
Did we beat the 16-minute record?
We may be there.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah, we may have. This certainly has something to do with the separation of church and state. Once you start prioritizing refugees based purely on their religious status and ignoring other factors, which he is, despite rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
That is definitely a separation of church and state issue inside the United States.
Right.
But then there's the usual get out, which is they're not citizens, so it doesn't count.
Exactly. And I'm to get hung up on just a piece of this, but you mentioned earlier you use sports to exercise your cognitive dissonance muscle. Well,
right.
Trump is the Arnold Schwarzenegger of the cognitive dissonance muscle. If he can say in a single sentence that this is not a Muslim ban, but we are going to prioritize Christians coming in, like, you are literally establishing a religious test and then saying that there's no religious test.
Mm-hmm. There's... It's not cognitive dissonance if you just don't care. Like, you get it, like, cognitive dissonance requires that you care that what you're thinking about makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely requires that what you're thinking about makes sense. And I'm not saying that Trump just never cares. There are certain things in my life that are in conflict that I don't have cognitive dissonance about. I just don't care. I don't care about it. This is one of those. He just doesn't care if this makes sense or not. So there's no cognitive dissonance. He sleeps like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is... actions have consequences. The most powerful government on planet Earth not thinking about the details of the situation that they're trying to create is a little bit terrifying, because you have people en route to the United States on papers not knowing that this is going to go down, because this was a executive order.
Right.
I mean, you know, they had rumbles, but it's not like
there wasn't a long-term build-up to this.
Right.
Right, which is what happens when something comes out of the legislature. You just say, okay, it's done now. You have to leave. And then they land, and now they're stateless people because they can't go here. They're trapped in the airport, et cetera, et cetera. It's death by ignorance in a lot of ways. I mean, you got people on, you know, I don't know how real this is or not, but you got people on Twitter saying, well, I'm from Iran, and I'm gay, and I'm here on a, no, I can't stay, and I'm going to die.
I'm going to go home and get killed.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Fun times.
This is just pure bigotry at its finest,
right?
And it's I mean, I hate that this happened,
mm-hmm.
but it's about time that Americans stop pretending that this doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
That we have come so far as a nation and as a country and as a people that racism doesn't exist anymore. People believe that here,
mm-hmm.
It's high time that we pay attention that these people are out there. These people that supported Trump. I'm not saying that they're all racists, and I'm not saying that they're all bigots, but some of them are,
right.
And some of them supported bigoted ideas. Maybe they personally didn't agree with it, but they allowed somebody who's going to enforce these orders or write these executive orders to go into office, and gave them the pen and the power to do it.
I wonder if him saying he's going to prioritize Christians is his way of saying that he's not racist.
Maybe in his mind, that's this is not a religious thing, and I proved it by doing this.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Islam isn't a race. So say, Christians are fine, you can be an Iranian, you know, a Libyan Christian, and you're in. But if so now it's about, I mean, he's basically boxing it in specifically that it is a religious test and nothing but.
Right.
Mm-hmm. By avoiding the race issue. So he sort of...
He's still a bigot, but...
Yeah. It's amendment bingo. Like, which amendment are you going to violate? And then everybody says, they're not citizens. And it's like, oh, okay.
But he's trying to do the Matrix Neo dodge of the racism comment by saying, no, it's just religion. It's not
race. Mm-hmm. I avoid, generally, publicly, comparisons to Hitler.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Because, except for the purposes of humor, I think you have noticed this. I call people Hitler because it's more, you know, where I come from, which is the internet. It's what people who have no, it's the argument of no recourse.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why you have a plaque at home.
I do have a plaque.
That says, I made it.
I got called Hitler on Ask an Atheist by Sam. Or I survived being called Hitler on Ask an Atheist by Sam Mulvey. Show's logo, date, Sam's signature. It's a
if
thing of beauty.
If this continues, you're going to have to make a bumper sticker or something.
There's going to be
a lot of people.
Yeah, I am not sending the president, though. But we've got... you know, we've got the, and the thing is, I'm having difficulty. There's so much. This is his first freaking week. Yeah. There is so much information coming out that I'm having difficulty verifying it all. So if I get something wrong, do please, if you know something I don't, send it to me, because I'm having, keeping all the parts. I got a whiteboard filled with like I'm gonna be the guy with the yarn going. All right, this, I'm having trouble keeping it all together. But okay, so he's prioritizing Christian refugees. He's talking about releasing a weekly statement of crimes committed by illegal immigrants?
I believe illegals, yes. Yeah.
Okay. And a bunch of other things that we're going to talk about.
National registration.
National registration, all of this stuff. This is, and specifically the weekly crimes of the illegals, is right out of the Jules Streicher, the Der Stürmer in, you know, 1935, 1936. This is right out of the fascist playbook.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first, wow, that's pretty German fascism to me, thing that I've seen. And that's a line. That is a line that should not have been crossed.
Right.
Otherwise, I would have compared him to Pinochet. he's basically Pinochet with a better, with actually, or perhaps worse PR. I don't know. I don't know.
Goodwin's law does not apply.
Yeah.
When you are literally following Hitler's playbook.
Yeah. If you lived in the world of the Running Man, would you talk about Godwin's law?
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah.
Does Godwin's law exist in? The Heinlein novel with the bugs that they made the stupid
Starship Troopers. Love
Starship Troopers.
Troopers. Yeah,
yeah.
Love that book.
With Hank Schrader in it. a very young Hank Schrader. Well, okay. So this is the bad side. Now we can talk a little bit about the good side. Four federal judges have issued stays on Trump's executive order banning refugees and immigrants from seven nations. U.S. District Judge Ann Donnelly of New York was the first judge to state. To issue a stay when she stopped the deportation of previously approved refugees. Donnelly's decision was followed by similar rulings by judges in Massachusetts, Virginia, and Washington State.
Yay!
U.S. District Judge Thomas Zille in Seattle stopped several federal agents from deporting two unnamed travelers. None of the decisions struck down the executive order. However, Matthew Segal, legal director of the ACLU, called the rulings a victory for justice, saying, "We told President Trump we would see him in court."
Now, you even kind of mentioned this earlier, but I feel like it's worth saying, not as a support. And let me start out by making clear. I hate this whole thing. I hate Trump. I hate this idea of blocking refugees. And we're going to get even my feelings on this even more with the next story. But
okay.
I think legally, strictly on a legal basis, I'm not sure that these are going to be upheld because the Constitution does not necessarily apply to non-citizens, which is what you're saying is people use an excuse that I don't have to care about this because they're non-citizens.
Right.
But, and I think that's a terrible way of getting around your own empathy.
Right.
But having said that, from a legal standpoint, this executive order might be able to stand. I'm not sure you could knock it down on the constitutional grounds.
Stuff like this didn't stand for a long time during the sort of the Trump preview of the beginning of the turn of the century with George W. Bush. Is there were a lot of stays like this, and a lot of them didn't hold up.
Right. The court struck down a lot of stuff that he tried to do.
Right.
And that was the end of it.
Some of it got through.
Right.
And the stuff that got through was stuff like this because it's non-citizens.
Yeah, this is why there are still people who are not being charged with anything sitting in Guantanamo Bay because the constitutional amendment guaranteeing a swift and proper trial doesn't apply to combatants of another nation.
Mm-hmm.
So we can throw them in Guantanamo and forget about them for a decade and a half.
Right.
Never mind any civil rights that we personally feel they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to do that because the Constitution doesn't apply to them. And when it comes to refugees, that's what I'm afraid of, is that it's not going to apply to them, and that's going to be the excuse that's going to keep this in place.
You know, you want to know the argument that really, really bothers me a lot, and this might feel like a shift, but it's not. It's the 21st century, and we're still thinking about stuff like this.
Yeah.
What, did you think that we'd all become magical gnomes after the year 2000? that we were all, would be like, there would be like a magical thing. The dawning of the age of Aquarius, perhaps? drugs in the water supply? What were you expecting to change in the world after some numerologically significant thing event happens that has no other connection to anything else, that we would suddenly become better human beings? It is 2017, and we're still talking about torture, and if you're surprised, I'm surprised. It is 2017, and we're still talking about people who are not citizens do not have rights. And if you're surprised, I'm surprised. I mean, the concept of fighting for your rights as a citizen of the United States. I mean, when this country started, most of the people who lived in it weren't citizens and didn't have rights.
Right.
Da-da.
Mm-hmm.
Not as the way we construe rights.
Mm-hmm. Landowning white men was
precisely
all that got it.
And it was a battle to change pretty much everything about it. And it's a battle that continues to this day, which is why people keep whining about the 14th Amendment. Anyway. And this is where the connection to definitely something humanist is. If you are a humanist, this is... If you are a humanist to your core, like maybe I am, because... The part of the reason I think I'm a humanist in my core is they're non-citizens, so they don't have rights. And there's my head just goes, does not compute.
Right.
I like literally, like, wait, what? They don't have rights because they're not citizens? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They're thinking, they're people.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I don't even want to call them humans, because there might be humans who aren't citizens. Or there might be non-human citizens someday. Who knows? But... Like, literally, I have trouble wrapping my head around the concept that because they come from a different country, we can treat them like cattle. We can cart them around like cattle. We can brand them if we choose. It's confusing.
But the thing that's a stark difference between when we talk about Guantanamo is those were combatants for the most part.
Right.
And or had some connection fighting against the U.S. and its interests. These are people escaping oppression and seeking asylum. Every story is different, right?
Can I just add alleged into that discussion of Guantanamo have the right context?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
Some of them are they're not alleged. I mean, we got video.
What brings them there is that ruling that we're bringing them here because they're
Geneva Convention.
Right, exactly.
Is what we're talking about.
Right. So this is a different scenario to me. And I am quoted on this show. You can go back and listen to it. That there's only one thing I have faith in, and it's the court system.
Okay.
And to have district judges say, no, you cannot do this. This is unconstitutional. This puts it in the realm of the courts are going to make the decision on this one.
Right.
And the Supreme Court may not even decide to take this one up because it's too big or it's too much, and they're just going to allow the district court judges to make this ruling for them.
Right.
And once that's been decided, it is end game for all of this. It's over. And it's I just see a big difference between blocking people fleeing war and death versus somebody who was arrested in their home country as an alleged combatant or physically attacking.
But I think there's a similarity here in that a lot of us were saying these people in Guantanamo deserve court trials, deserve to be tried in court.
Right.
I mean, even say what you will, but even at the end of World War II, they had a trial.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that never happened for a lot of these people in Guantanamo. They're just going to rot there for the rest of their lives.
Right. Well, you have to charge them with a crime before you can put them on trial.
Right. Or you're supposed to release them.
Right.
And some of these people, they may not have been antagonistic towards the United States when they went in.
Mm-hmm. They definitely are now.
Yeah, they are now.
Yeah, now you can't release them.
Right. And that's why I think, and because we didn't acknowledge the rights of these people, we have made the problem worse.
Mm-hmm.
We have allowed the problem to exist for generations farther than it might have otherwise because we didn't treat them like human beings.
But we've done this for so long.
Precisely.
Osama bin Laden told us a long time before 9/11 that your interests in Syria and the UAE, like you're causing trouble. And we're not going to stand for being oppressed.
Ah.
Well, whether you agree with it or not, he said that you're causing trouble. Now, It's Osama bin Laden. Like, are you really going to listen to everything he says?
No.
But the point that I'm making is that these people who are enemies, they have told us in the past, like, these are the things that we want and we expect and we hope for, and we choose not to listen.
There is a rhetorical positioning in everything you have just said that, sure, I am very uncomfortable with.
Okay.
I can't really put my finger on what precisely it is,
mm-hmm,
but now it feels like we're getting that we can't treat people like human beings coming the other way. I'm not necessarily against foreign intervention, because, mm-hmm, I'm not really certain what the point of a nation state is. But the way we've been doing it, yeah, it creates problems. But
right,
but
sometimes you have to create problems.
But it's an extension of the way politics have been moving forward for, right, several thousand years.
Right.
Which is, again, goes back to the argument that I'm saying, is why do you think 2017 or the 21st century is such a special issue?
Right.
It's not that big of a deal. But I think at the end of this, there needs to be a universal rights amendment, where, citizen or not citizen, you are afforded some rights, mm-hmm, within the United States of America, because the United States of America was founded on certain principles that we just aren't holding to right now. And some of them we haven't held to in 50 years plus. But that list of things that we care about as Americans has just dwindled to something tiny. And it's beginning to look a lot like perhaps we're waiting for Augustus.
Hmm.
Ready to move on?
Okay, I gotta let it all drop out of my head. Okay.
All right. No, if you got something to say, go ahead.
Well, it was, you say that some of these things that we purport to believe in, we may not have been following for 50 years. I would argue that we've never followed a lot of them.
Agreed.
I agree. Yeah.
There is another podcast. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts about law and about the Supreme Court, and there's all sorts of really great interesting
stuff. Do you have
stuff.
A recommendation for us?
I have two.
Okay.
One is Opening Arguments. It's with lawyer P. Andrew Torres and Thomas Smith from Thomas and the Bible, atheistically,
right,
speaking, all that. They do really great, like, in-depth looks at some really controversial topics, and just, like, their point is not to give an opinion on the topic, but to explain how the law is applied and why, what sort of mechanisms, what's the actual, you know, this section of U.S. code applies here in this way, and the language says this, etc. It's very good. The other one was called More Perfect, and
More Perfect's great.
Yeah.
A 6-episode run so far on Supreme Court cases. And there's this one where they're talking about the origin of the Supreme Court and the idea of judicial review. And they were talking about how, like, this was the moment where the courts basically took the power to decide if laws are constitutional or unconstitutional. But someone else argued, we've never necessarily listened to that. And he brought up this great moment. He says, well, I don't want to say great moment. It's a terrible moment in our history. But the way he put it is, like, a couple of years after, you know, 20 years after this whole Marbury versus Madison case, we have President Andrew Jackson. And he says, I want to do terrible things to Indians. And the court says, you probably shouldn't do terrible things to Indians. And Andrew Jackson says, I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing. And then did terrible things to Indians.
Right.
Like, the court ruling only applies so long as the state is willing to follow it.
Right.
And time and time again, even when the courts are standing up for our rights, the state's like, meh.
And that's what's changing here is the system of the United States only works as long as there's universal respect for the invested powers and, mm-hmm, for the invested powers in both the branches, the branches of the government and the rights that are assumed to exist in the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never been perfect on that. Our batting record is not 1,000.
No.
But our batting record might be headed for a new low.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that we are not in unprecedented territory yet. Everything this knob has done, he's done some, you know, has been done by somewhere else. Andrew Jackson, Zachary Taylor, whatever.
Right.
But maybe not Zachary Taylor. But we're not in unprecedented territory yet. We are in modern unprecedented territory. We haven't lived with something this bad since the since industrialization. Yeah.
six months ago, I would have never believed we could get here again.
Yeah.
Just 6 months ago.
Yeah. All right. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau wrote in support of refugees on social media in response to Trump's executive order. Trudeau posted a message on Twitter saying, "To those fleeing persecution, terror, and war, Canadians will welcome you, regardless of your faith. Diversity is our strength." Followed by the hashtag, Welcome to Canada. Some reports suggested that the Canadian government has offered to take refugees turned away by the U.S. because of Trump's order. Canada has already admitted almost 40,000 Syrian refugees with the widespread support of the Canadian population.
This is nothing to me than just Canada reiterating
yeah.
that we're not terrible people up north. Come on by.
Right.
Hey, y'all. Sorry about our neighbors.
Ouch. Ow. Ow.
I know one Canadian, and he would take very much offense to that.
Yeah.
I love this because this is a country I thought I lived in. Mm-hmm. This is a country I don't wish I lived in Canada, per se. It's cold up there, but...
It's 20 minutes from here. It's no colder there than it is here.
It snows more in Seattle than it does in Vancouver.
No, this is the country that I thought America was, the country that would see people hurting and knowing that we have the resources to take them in and make their lives better would do that. There is this quote that I want to read from this article. This is from the New York Times, and I literally cried when I read this line. This is, Mr. Trump's executive order is not only at odds with Mr. Trudeau's, the Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's, policy, but it also does not reflect the general sentiment in Canada, where Syrian refugee program enjoys widespread support. About 16,000 Syrian refugees who have arrived since November have been wholly or partly sponsored by individual Canadians or groups that have come together to raise sponsorship funds. During Mr. Trudeau's current cross-country tour, the chief complaint about immigration has been that refugees are not arriving as quickly as would-be sponsors would like.
Let that sink. What could we possibly add to that?
Yes.
There's nothing to add. That's there. This is here. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I go into a break. I'm going to continue talking this briefly when we come back, but we've got, like I said, we are going to talk about the Pope this week.
Hasn't got we trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster in God we trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn.
And we want to ask you an important question. Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children. That's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
See, I didn't even think about it, and I just did metal into metal.
Metal. This is a fantastic theme. Like, yeah. This is an amazing version of this. The drums is...
If I was a professional wrestler, this would be my song.
I have to become a professional wrestler.
What would be your shtick?
This? This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. The Iranian government is considering whether to take reciprocal action against the U.S. after Trump signed an executive order banning immigration from Iran. While no direct decision has been made, Iranian officials have been heavily critical of the ban and suggested the possibility of making a similar ban on U.S. citizens entering their nation. Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif stated that unlike the U.S. ban, however, any Iranian legislation would respect the rights of dual nationals and anyone with an Iranian visa. While the U.S. and Iran have had no official diplomatic relations since 1980, a recent relaxing of sanctions and a deal ending Iran's nuclear weapons program by the Obama administration could be put at risk with the rising tensions. Really? Right. You're going to respect the rights of...
Yeah.
Really?
Iran is doing better on the human rights.
Really? Oh, boy.
Well, and I think this story is important because it's like one of the things I really, really hate about the Trump administration is that I don't believe Trump is capable of understanding nuance and complex situations. The fact that he just wants to, you know, throw a fit about Muslims and refugees could end a deal that put a stop to Iran's nuclear weapons program.
Right.
It's not something that would have ever occurred to him because he doesn't understand the far-reaching implications of the office he sits in.
Well, every negative thing that he's ever done in his entire life and career, he's never gotten punished for it.
Right.
He files for bankruptcy and just moves on and opens the next Taj Mahal. Exactly. Like, he doesn't have to pay for his misdeeds. So why would he care that this is a deal that took 8 years to broker, and it stopped a foreign power that is considered dangerous, especially at the time, and still is. And you know what? Forget it. Don't worry about it. Yeah, we're gonna do this thing over here.
Yeah,
and not even care what you could leave behind.
I wonder what it would look like to him if the U.S. I mean, does he think he can declare bankruptcy for the United States? Like, I don't know how that works, because I don't know what he thinks the bailout. Does he think Britain's going to come by? Or, you know, the Queen is going to suddenly retake powers and say, "Come back! Here's a ton of money.
Yeah,
you don't have to pay taxes for 11 years."
Yeah, he clearly has no understanding. It's either he's ignorant or doesn't care.
But when
it's
an obviously theocratic, torturey state that has been described by the atheist community as well as American politics, mm-hmm. it's basically the personification of evil, seems to be doing better on the human rights spectrum than the United States of America, which places human rights in the first top 10 most important sentences of its, you know, of its governmental header files.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is... you know what? I knew I was going to end up in a science fiction novel. I just didn't realize I would be that guy in that dystopian cyberpunk novel. You know, I used to be a programmer, but I washed out, and now I mope around my house and scream into a microphone, into a technological network that nobody... You know, that maybe somebody's listening to me, maybe not, and I'm just waiting for the cops to come get me. I'm in that book!
Shazbot.
It's becoming kind of ridiculous. Anyway, 30 arrests at SeaTac. 4 travelers sent back to their country of departure from SeaTac on Saturday without being able to speak with lawyers. A Yemeni and a Sudanese traveler released at SeaTac at the behest of the Northwest Immigrants' Rights Project after judicial rulings ordering the release of travelers who'd already boarded the planes when Trump's order was signed. The Washington State Governor Jay Inslee, the executive order is unconstitutional, illegal, and religious discrimination in its barest and obvious form. And that's the nicest thing he said in that speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson, along with 17 other states attorneys generals and the United Attorneys General. No, it is attorneys generals. That's confusing as hell. And the AG of D.C. released a joint statement ensuring that they will work together to ensure the federal government obeys the Constitution, respects our history as a nation of immigrants, and does not unlawfully target anyone because of their natural origin or faith. And will use all of the tools of our offices to fight this unconstitutional order and preserve our nation's national security and core values. I've never liked that we are a nation of immigrants, because we're actually a nation of immigrants, and then we move here, and then we say, we're not immigrants anymore, this is our stuff, and then more immigrants come, and we go, screw you! That's our history. Mm-hmm. McCain...
We stole this land fair and square.
This land is our land, we stole it from those guys.
This is a history lesson from Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey.
And the reason I'm shotgunning all this stuff because this is happening in my freaking backyard. SeaTac is the airport I flew into when I came back from Chicago. SeaTac stands for Seattle Tacoma. I live in Tacoma. This is what's happening in my world. This is right now.
Mm-hmm. And this is just one.
And this is just one facet of it. And this is what I'm thinking about it as an atheist, as a humanist, and as a potential sociopath. So, And that's, you know, and then John McCain suddenly speaking sane again, because now he has a real target. And it easily says stuff like, we fear this executive order will become a self-inflicted wound in the fight against terrorism. Our most important allies in the fight against ISIL are the vast majority of Muslims who reject the apocalyptic ideology of hatred. This executive order may do more to help terrorist recruitment than improve our security. This is McCain and Graham in the Senate. Republicans, like, from Arizona.
Warhawk Republicans.
Warhawk Republicans.
Who are like, dude, no, this is bad, bad times.
It's confusing, and it's angry, and I want to scream, and I'd like to do more than scream, but I don't want to be arrested. So this is important. We need to pay attention to these things, and we need to think about what it means to us after 10 plus years of fighting the good fight in the atheism visibility movement. Because at this point, that fight that I was fighting since 2006 to, you know, it's taken on in the light. In 2006, George W. Bush was still in office. We still had some of the stuff that we're talking about now. But he was vastly unpopular. And the movement that we were in was a response to stuff that happened under his watch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we had 8 years of Obama where it flourished and then sort of like most fads, kind of died out a little bit.
Well, and
I decided I... Well, go ahead.
Well, I don't think it's controversial to say that the atheist movement has an infighting problem.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I feel like a lot of that is because while there were important issues to discuss during the relative calmness of the Obama administration, there wasn't that giant threat of executive action impacting our rights personally. And I feel like you're probably going to see this infighting and this purity movement and this argument over who's an atheist, who believes what, who's... This is all going to drop real fast because we got much bigger problems.
I wish I had your faith in humanity, my friend.
Yeah, I feel the same way Sam's feeling on this one.
I okay, how about I hope, like, if there were ever a reason to just kind of set all of that aside, set that pettiness and that bickering aside, and just start focusing. This is the reason.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I mean, there's a lot. The atheism community, much like, you know, any other community based upon beliefs, or lack thereof, has a significant amount of infighting. The self-identity crisis that comes with this sort of thing, the figuring out in-group, the desire for an in-group and an out-group and factionalization and all that stuff. And I hate all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I wanted that stuff, I would have stayed in religion, because then, you know, at least you have clearly defined ideologies. Or I would have gone to religion, I suppose I should say, more appropriately.
It's not too late, Sam.
I'm not. Yeah, I'm going to get an earful of that in a couple hours. I hate that stuff, and I've never wanted to cover it in Ask an Atheist. The couple times we've been doing it, we did. I was never really happy with it. So I've been focusing on the core values of why we got started in the first place, which is our place at the table in civil discourse of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our rights. The political party's not throwing us away for a cheap vote. Not having to deal with ceremonial deism, which is not actually ceremony at all, when dealing with governments. Us having to look the other way when the Catholic Church and other large religious organizations prey upon other human beings. You know, this is the stuff that I've wanted to talk about on Ask an Atheist, and this is what the show has been about. But in the context of a shift this violent in the rhetoric and in the narrative of the United States, it becomes difficult for those of us who are humanists to focus on that. And I feel like it makes more sense to me as an atheist and a humanist to fight the greater fight that approaches us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm talking about it. And if that means nobody's going to listen to me anymore and I need to find another way to do what I need to do, then that's what's going to happen. Because I cannot, like, I was afraid that if I broke the seal on this political stuff, because I was very, you know, I was very careful not to make this a show about politics, like a lot of other shows about atheism, where they mix politics and atheism and whatever, and they feel like, frankly, most of these shows, if you're an atheist, you are therefore a liberal, and if you don't think like me, then you're not an atheist. And that was not a thing I wanted to do.
Right.
That was never the position I wanted to take. And so I was very, and this came from Mike, but this is a conversation between me, Mike, and Casey about how we would take the political thing. And it's like, I came in thinking there's a certain political topics I'm not going to talk about on this show. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into my socialism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Mike codified it for us and made a very clear vision about why we wouldn't do it. And I have scrupulously stuck to that concept of politics for Ask an Atheist, even after Mike stopped being a producer in 2013, because I thought it was a methodology that worked. The context this show that exists in has changed, and it's very difficult for me to continue that scrupulous division of interests in the face of what's happening now. In the context of people closing closing public transportation in my town, blocking off the airports, and people being arrested and sent off to foreign countries without even a chance to talk to a lawyer. This is the context that I live in now. This is my world, and this is what I must face. And I cannot ignore it. I can't even ignore it on this own little area that I've created within Ask an Atheist to talk about other things. I cannot ignore it. I cannot.
The idea that humans and protecting humans is a liberal trait is disgusting.
It's pretty
bad. And I don't think that's what you're saying.
No.
By no means, but there are people that do believe that. You've done a great job on the show of not allowing politics to influence the decisions and the direction of the show.
Right.
You and I sit across the table right now, starkly different ideas on the way government should run.
Absolutely.
You are on the far left, and I'm about as far right as you could come for somebody who's reasonable.
Using the ridiculously outmoded spectrum model,
right.
I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the thing that connects us is not politics.
No.
It is humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is us being the same.
Universal rights.
Exactly. And there's no reason why we should or you should ignore that on this show. I don't think you go back and you're changing anything that you've done differently in the past, or you're adding a new piece to the show. I think you're focusing on what's happening in front of you.
I do worry that I won't be able to put the genie back into the bottle. But you know what? Who cares? Who wants to talk about the Pope? I want to talk about the Pope. The Vatican will take over a religious order of knights after the resignation of their leader following a condom scandal.
Condemnation.
Matthew Festing of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta offered his resignation after his refusal to cooperate with a papal investigation over the ousting of the head of the order's health minister after it was revealed only one charity branch was distributing condoms in Myanmar. Pope Francis personally accepted Festing's resignation and will appoint a papal delegate to run the organization. The order, known as the Knights of Malta, is a sovereign organization whose origins trace back to the Crusades of the 11th century.
This thing that they're taking away, this whole condom issue,
yeah.
From my understanding of it, is this was not a long-running program. This was a new thing.
Okay.
That they had just done maybe for a couple months or a couple weeks or something along those lines. It's tough to find a lot of information in regards to that. And I looked, I did my best. So if somebody knows there is some, please share it. But it's
if you have information on
the Knights of Malta,
Knights of Malta papal condom scandal, please get it to us because I could talk about this forever.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, I got a question.
Yes.
What the heck are the Knights of Malta?
Fascinating question.
I'm glad you asked.
Okay.
So I was curious about this myself because when I was reading the article, it talked about sovereignty as a sovereign group and everything. I'm like, well, it's Knights of Malta, they're Maltese, right? Is that simple? Right? Right.
That's right. What you think.
So we start digging in. Oh, no.
Nope,
this
sir.
Is weird. Okay. There was a group of knights during the Crusades. The Knights, I believe,
Knights Hospitaller?
Yes.
Okay. Hospitallers.
It's one of those words I've never heard pronounced. I've only read.
Okay.
So they started a hospital to take care for pretty much anybody during the First Crusade, 1046, somewhere around there. 1,000 years ago.
Okay.
Okay. That group eventually all evolved into this Knights of Malta.
Okay.
This is the same group, and there is a direct line from this group from the Crusades following through history. The reason they're called the Knights of Malta is because they did live on the island of Malta for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Tyson here asks, why don't they live there anymore? Well, the reason is...
Funny you should ask.
The reason is Napoleon.
Oh.
They were ejected from the island of Malta after Napoleon took it over during his war of domination.
Yeah, one of them.
One of them. And then, after they were ejected, Britain and France came to an agreement that the island would be given its sovereignty back and the Knights would be allowed to return. But then they went to war again and everyone kind of forgot, oh yeah, we kicked these guys off this island and didn't do anything with them. So now they live in a castle in Rome.
Okay.
And they are sovereign. They're not a nation per se. They don't have land.
They have no land.
But they have money. They have their own passports. They have their own postage. They have, how was it called? It was like observer status at
right.
the UN.
At the UN, right, yeah.
They have diplomatic.
That is the king of grandfathered in, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. They have diplomatic relations with over 100 nations. Like, this is a group that lives in a building in Rome and have been sovereign for 1,000 years.
Jeez.
And here's the thing. They will no longer be sovereign.
Not anymore.
The leader resigned to the Pope, and Pope Francis is going to put in a papal delegate. This will become a subsidiary of the Catholic Church. 1,000 years, they survived Crusades, they survived the Black Plague, they survived Napoleon, but condoms is something they couldn't get over.
So diseases, being stabbed...
Losing your home.
Napoleon. Latex on a penis. Die!
You have gone too far.
That's it. We're done. We're walking away from all this.
What the heck? How do you follow that up?
I know.
Oh,
it's weird because it's like I've read this like Order of the Knights of or something like that. And like, what is this? This sounds like a
Do they got to all turn in their passports? How's this going to work?
I have no idea.
Is this like an invasion where they're currently under foreign power, foreign control?
And I think it's...
Is there going to be a Knights of Malta revanchist movement? That would be pretty good.
I would expect so.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
Well, it's not really revanchist if there's no land.
Maybe they look at it more like as like a U.S. territory.
Someone's going to go
independent.
The top.
They're independent, but we still kind of...
The Knights of Guam.
There you go. And someone's going to go to the top of the building and demand their own flag be put there. Like, this is our building. We paid the rent for 1,000 years.
You rent this place. Oh, man. After a story like that, all I could go for is a shake.
I think I know where we can go.
Where's that?
A new McDonald's location quietly opened in Rome near the Vatican on a Catholic church-owned building. The restaurant, dubbed the McVatican, opened just a couple blocks from St. Peter's Basilica on the bottom floor of a building owned by the church. McDonald's opened the new franchise with little fanfare, with no public announcement, and only a quiet addition of the location on the website's map. Cardinal Elio Segreccia called the decision to rent the space to the corporation a disgrace, saying that no price should justify selling an unhealthy mega sandwiches that he would never eat at the Borgo Pio. The building in question is home of several senior cardinals.
Here's the thing. He's clearly never had a McRib.
I believe that there is actually a papal bull declaring the McRib a tool of Satan sometime in the 1800s. Because those things are evil. And you cannot get rid of them. They're like, they'll always come back.
They're like herpes. Which, if you had condoms, you could maybe.
Yeah, Knights of Malta had a solution for this McRib crisis. And you guys, No allies for us. Is this the beginning of the melding of McDonald's and the Catholic Church?
I'm going to say no. Because
should we have a countdown to the McEucharist?
Within stone's throw of this current McDonald's is two more McDonald's and a Burger King.
Yeah, but it's on the Vatican property now.
Okay, it's not within the borders of the Vatican.
It's not the state.
It is not within the state. It is in a building owned by the Vatican. The state. And that's right. The sort of key difference.
No. I want to see, the blood of Christ available in one of those soda filtered soda fountains. I'll have a number three with a side of I just blew the joke. With a side of confession.
There, okay.
That's what I was going for.
It's just mac sauce.
Yeah. So.
That's the secret they won't tell you.
Don't choke on a...
Well, I feel like this is an example of the ever dwindling power of the Catholic Church. They can't even keep McDonald's
out. They just took over a country.
That's true.
Dwindling power my ass.
I was about to say, I don't think it's the dwindling power of the Catholic Church. I think it's the rising power of Ronald McDonald.
You thought Jesus was powerful.
Hey, what's Grimm has been up to the last 20 years? There's a reason why you haven't seen him, okay?
Yeah. Red hair, yellow jumpsuit, clown nose, crucifix.
Would it now be Pope McCheese?
No, Archbishop McCheese.
Okay. There you go.
he's the Archbishop of McDonald's. I literally saw McDonald's in the Vatican. I'm surprised that hasn't happened already. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. When we come back, we are going to talk about... WikiLeaks, I guess. All right, cool.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Has God We Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster In God We Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? we are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And I have one person I'd like to thank this week. I'd like to thank David from the internet for beating Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge of listeners of Ask an Atheist by Peggy from local Kent to help us keep the lights on. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. It'll take you directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. I also have a Patreon. I don't know how I'm integrating into this website yet, or this whole Patreon thing into the show. I've been doing it for, what, 6 months now? And I'm figuring, oh yeah, Peggy's Challenge. I have this nice thing for Peggy's Challenge. I get to say hi to people. It's work. But the Patreon's doing really well, better than I ever thought it would. I thought I'd get like $5 a month. And I'm doing a little better than that.
$6.
For what it's worth, I would suggest go read the rewards level, the levels, because you got pretty funny in there.
I did. Oh, okay.
I was entertained by the $10,000 level.
It said in the notes, go for broke. And so I did. Figuring I would. Broke, that is. but yeah, the Patreon thing's working really well. I've got some projects in the pipe. But you know, I kind of got to figure this house thing out. But I'm done with the asbestos.
Yay!
I just got
one less thing for your lungs to be annoyed about.
I didn't mention this on the show. I've had this persistent cough and congestion, and my voice sounds terrible. And I went to the doctor, and I got diagnosed with something, and they gave me an albuterol inhaler, and I had to immediately text Becky. They gave me an inhaler. It's not asthma. It's not asthma. And I don't know what the official name is, but it really sounded like pulmonary annoyance.
Which sounds like the most Sam condition ever.
Yeah, my lung.
There's been one case in the last 100 years.
My lungs are annoyed. I need to keep them calm. you know, I mean, I am doing the abatement stuff, but I actually have experience with that, and I'm all suited up, and, blah, 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 dust. A former member of the Mormon Church has started a site for current members to publish private Mormon documents, dubbed Mormon WikiLeaks. The site is an attempt to publicize the inner workings of the church. The site was started by Ryan McKnight, a former Mormon who published secretly recorded meetings he had with church officials when he decided to leave the faith. McKnight insists that he doesn't want gossip about specific members, and has stated that he already refused documents that were of those sorts. Instead, he says he wants documents that expose the institutional workings of the church. McKnight hopes that the site will motivate the church to be more transparent, to the point that his site will become irrelevant.
You know, when I first read this story, I thought it said Brian McKnight, the pop singer from the 90s, and I was really excited.
That's a deep cut.
That's, and I don't know why. I was like, oh, he's back.
Why would that excite you?
Don't you judge me on my music. Remember earlier when we talked about this?
No. You can like him, that's fine. But why would him opening up a Mormon WikiLeaks site be? It's not one. It's not the other. It's Pineapple Pen. Yeah.
What sort of internet activism has Tevin Campbell done?
I needed that.
I really like what he's doing with this site, though.
Yeah,
where he's focusing on the church and the church doctrine, and not members or people specifically. He wants information. He wants to be able to share the stuff out there, and so people can talk about what the Mormon Church is doing behind closed doors. But don't attack people.
Yeah.
Let's attack the church.
So
it's too easy to attack people.
Julian Assange's WikiLeaks.
Right.
Whether or not you... what I've noticed about human beings is whether or not you like WikiLeaks depends about what information they're releasing at the time.
Mm.
Like, everybody's like, you know, suddenly in the U.S., at least Republicans like WikiLeaks. Next week, next week, Republicans think WikiLeaks should be on fire, and Democrats love WikiLeaks. And then Green Party loves WikiLeaks, and then nobody loves WikiLeaks. And then everybody, and it's the political positioning behind regular WikiLeaks is so transparent. To the point where my turning point came, which is when he started saying stuff like, "Ah, yeah, no, it makes sense to post the prostate exam results of Twitter users."
No.
What for? Like, what? Why could you? Why?
Well, the fact about Julian Assange is he has been living in a small room in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for a decade.
So he might, yeah.
He's going a little crazy.
Slowly like, going insane. Yeah. Yeah.
He should connect with the Knights of Malta. That's how they did it for 1,000 years. Yeah.
Just don't bring any jewels. Don't bring any condoms. Leave that stuff at home. So... this composer, he's out of the gate saying, there's no point in releasing personal information to people, so I'm just not going to do it. He's already turned stuff down.
Right.
That's how, you know, at least from my motivation, which is organizations don't actually have the same rights as individual humans, I think that's exactly the way it should be done. And right. I know, you know, I'd like to see, from my evil jackass atheist perspective, yes, expose the Mormon church, expose them for the lies that they are, sure, fine, but I even know people who are devout Mormons who have always had problems with the opacity of the way one of the first truly American religions has you know prosecuted itself in the last 200 years, so right. I think this could actually be good all around, where, you know, we start to see the inner workings and start to understand why it took till 1978 to say that black people aren't immediately cursed.
Right.
Stuff like that. That'd be good stuff to know. Yeah. Because it's like, that happened and it's about time. I hear from people. This can't be a bad thing. The only thing this is bad for is for people who have power based on questionable pretenses for whom that power may be exposed.
Right. If you actually believe the tenets of the Mormon faith, actually believe like this is truly God and his work sent through Joseph Smith, then there is no reason for the church dealings to be secretive. Mm-hmm. Because if you had truth, then anything going on behind closed doors would only lead more people to truth. It's you only do it behind closed doors if you want to hide what's going on.
Take notes, Pope.
Yeah.
Also, Jehovah's Witness head guy.
Mr. Watchtower.
Yeah. Captain Watchtower.
Captain Watchtower.
Damn it. All right, one email and then this ridiculously long episode will be. But this is a good one. This goes right to the core of our show. This is Daniel from Minnesota who writes, I have free choice to promote intelligent design in the Bible, as you have free choice to rudely and disappointingly question my belief. Am I harming anyone by proclaiming that both intelligent design and the Bible are not only for real, but ironclad fact?
A little editorializing in there, isn't there?
Oh, have you ever gotten one of these emails that didn't have editorial? Come on!
I have the right to spout absolute truth. Well, you also have the right to spout crap that ruins people's lives.
Yeah.
That's a fair question, right?
Well, my answer...
It's not a leading question at all.
Yeah, the answer to my question... My answer to this question... Like, the answer that I would respond to this guy is moo. No, M-O-O, too. Yeah, here's a cow. Moo. No, this is a dumb question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because this is what religious people do. He says, I have free choice, so why are you debating me? Because I have free choice and I'm allowed to do this. And he's confusing free choice to do something with...
It's truth value.
A right... No. The truth has nothing to do with this. This is intelligent design. he thinks that his rights mean he doesn't get challenged. And so that he says he views our expressing our free rights, showing people the scientifically backed facts, holes in his argument, the frankly disgusting way intelligent design proponents manipulate you socially in order to make you believe in them, things like that. He's seeing us doing the same thing he's doing as a violation of his rights.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The whole casting of this question is broken at the outset.
Right.
Because it's rights for him, not rights for us.
Right.
There is always, I was reading someone and I wish I could credit them, but somebody was pointing out back with the whole Duck Dynasty thing when what's his name? I don't even care. Oh, Phil Robinson. See, apparently I do care. But when he was going off about when he was young and black people were happy to work in cotton fields and everyone's like, oh my God, that's racist. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
And then other people came to his defense. It's like, he has freedom of speech. You can't criticize what he's saying. I'm like, well, one, we're not the government, so yes, we can. Mm-hmm. Two, we have freedom of speech as well, which covers our criticism. Three, is your best defense really, well, it's not technically illegal what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, is that what you have?
Right.
The issue with people like that and the people that want to defend him, you know, Phil in that case, the case, is that they think that this transfers over to school education, public school education.
Right.
And you know what? You have the freedom to stand on a soapbox on any corner in any city in this country you want and spout whatever stupid idea that you have. You have that right. And I have the right to stand right next to you and call you an idiot to your face or criticize and say, nope, he's wrong, and here's the facts that prove him wrong. You do not have that right to stand in front of a school of children that we are publicly paying for and say those things. If you want to do that, you are legally allowed to have a private school that could spout that garbage, and there's nothing we could do to stop
it. Don't count on any government funding, though.
You're not going to be funded.
Well,
we don't know.
Ideally,
that.
We should not be able to count on
it. There you go.
Yeah, I would say way to limit your children's success.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have to leave that little...
They're going to have to enter the real world
at
some point.
They're going to have to leave that cloning vat and go into the real world where they're going to have to learn all this stuff in like a 99 class. And they're going to have to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the problem here is that he's seeing... Oh, this is so difficult to unpack. He sees the secular nature of the government as the usually with these questions. Okay, mm-hmm. You might say, to start out, you might say, wow, you're loading the simple question up with a lot of stuff that he's not necessarily saying. I'm doing that because I've talked to this guy 80 million times now, and I know exactly the thinking behind this. If he disagrees and he's saying something else, then fine. Have him email me again. And tell me where I'm wrong, and then I'll continue to call him a jackass. Because I am, in fact, rude. He has rights to speak. I have rights to speak. We are both exercising those rights to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's the simple answer to his question. But when he says rudely and disappointingly, and he starts saying, this question is so loaded with so much stuff, as you say, with education.
Mm-hmm.
To move on, modern medicine wouldn't exist without evolution, without our understanding of evolution. We wouldn't be able to do modern genetics. All the stuff that they're talking about doing, all the stuff that's going to save your life 10 years from now, wouldn't be possible without evolution. I have the right to say that fact.
Right.
Beyond that, he thinks that secularism in the government context, this is why I don't like calling ourselves secularists when we mean atheists.
Mm-hmm.
Atheist is a choice. It's a side in the secularism conversation. Secular in a governmental context means no decision whatsoever. It doesn't say.
No position.
No position. You are allowed to have a religion. I'm allowed to not. Two people are allowed to have different religions. The point of the government isn't to have a say in this conversation. It's to have no say, to allow this conversation to happen at the level of the foundational unit of the government, which is the American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, it's also insistent that the government does not get to treat anyone differently. Like the government, because they don't have a say, treats everyone, regardless of their beliefs, exactly the same.
Right. But then we go to the psychology of it, where he thinks he's got these rights because he's got ironclad facts in the Bible. But we have corroboration outside of scientific literature. We have corroboration in nature. We have corroboration in research. We have corroboration in medicine. And we're allowed to say these things as well. And I'm also allowed to tell you that your methodologies, if you talk about intelligent design in the Bible, of getting people to believe you are execrable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm allowed to tell people that what you are doing is dangerous. I'm allowed to tell people that you have a right to do it, but you shouldn't listen to him because the end result of this is you under control by people who would use you for purposes that are not necessarily in your best interest.
Right.
I'm allowed to say these things. I'm allowed to point out this harm because I have the right to free speech, just as he does. But because I've got some meat in the argument, and he can't really, and that's a difficult argument to refute. He goes for the, well, why are you challenging my rights? Because that's an easier argument to have.
It's easier for him to just call us snowflakes.
Yeah.
Why not?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
As long as we have free speech. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Tyson.
Thanks for having me.
This is Ask an Atheist. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Email us at questions.askanatheist.tv. Twitter us at askanatheistwa. I really need advice on this, on how to handle this political thing in the show. There's a decision to do it, and then there's the execution of it. And the execution is the thing I'm not sure on yet. Because right now, I just turn on the microphones and start ranting, and I don't know that that's the right choice. I think maybe some intelligence is required here. So if you have some intelligence, and I assume you do, you listen to me, send me an email. Talk to you guys next week. Yeah, that was kind of jerky, wasn't it?